This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora everyone, welcome to another episode of Aotearoa Pathways to Arts. It's me, Becky Bateman, back for another one. And today we've got a fabulous guest on the show today. She's calling in from Auckland, from Auckland Museum. The fabulous, awesome Bev Moon. Hello, Bev.
Hi.
Yeah, you can
hear me. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I was going to do a really awful pun of I'm over the moon that Bev Moon was, but I thought, no, that's pretty terrible. That's quite bad. I did it anyway, clearly.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
I'm over the moon to be talking to you, Shirley.
Thank you. And Bev, if people have not listened to the show before, generally what we do is we talk to an artist or a community group leader or someone who's doing something at Aotearoa at the moment. We've had fabulous guests on recently this year, and I really, really wanted to talk to you because your exhibition, Fortune, it opened on Friday, and it's up for another couple of months, and it's absolutely fabulous, so I thought we could have a really good old natter about natter. Oh, you see what I did there? More knitting puns.
Natter.
about Fortune. But first of all, would you like to introduce yourself very briefly, because I know there's a lot of stories we can talk about, and I don't want to, you know, talk about it all in the first 5 minutes, but do you want to introduce yourself very briefly, who you are, what you do, and briefly.
I'm Bev Moon. I'm a fourth generation Chinese New Zealander. I grew up in Wellington and now I live in Auckland. And when I was a kid, I used to want to be a spy or a cartoonist. I'm the youngest of six kids, and we were the only Chinese family at my school.
You would be a
but
rubbish
people
spy.
Always, and I know, I talk too much. It's absolutely true.
Sorry.
People always wanted to walk home with me, though, because I would always get free fish and chips because my dad owned the fish and chip shop.
Yes, you'd be a good friend.
Yeah. And I was a frustrated artist my whole life. I worked in museums and galleries my whole life, but as a way of being close to art. And I didn't really start making my own until around 2020 when I started learning to paint. And then lockdown happened and everyone had lots of time to do painting or drawing, making sourdough, all of those things that interested them. So, and in 2021 I started knitting some dumplings, as you do, and that turned into my show Fortune, which is now showing at Aotearoa.
Fantastic. Yes, because I was thinking back when we were talking about lockdown and thinking, what was I doing? And I was making some pretty terrible sourdoughs, I think, and pretending that's what they're meant to taste like and forcing my family to eat them. But yours is a much more sensible project. And I suppose with lockdowns, we really didn't know how long we were going to be in lockdown.
No. And Auckland was treated to the four-month lockdown in 2021 when there were other people driving around with KFC in their boots and supposed sex workers up north. And I was just thinking, gosh, I haven't lived, you know. But anyway, the lockdown just kept going. And I started making these dumplings. And I didn't think the lockdown was going to go so long. But, you know, I just thought, oh, I'll just keep doing it while the lockdown's happening. And anyway, 4 months later and then another 2 months, and then I made quite a big table spread of Chinese yam cha dishes, which is a Cantonese tradition, and I'm Cantonese, which is sort of the Chinese who've been in New Zealand for a long time, like generations, they're almost all Cantonese. So if you know someone so we all came from the southern end of China, which is very close. So a place called Guangdong, which is very close to Hong Kong. And Hong Kong, of course, they speak Cantonese as well. So we were Cantonese, minority of China, you know. So most people speak Mandarin. But where we were from was quite a, it was coastal and it was quite a poor part of the country. And there were sort of, there were wars and all sorts of things that went on, which meant that people would leave, you know, and go abroad for better opportunities. And it's actually called, so where we're from, which is Guangdong and around the Pearl River Delta and Toishan, it's called the first home of the overseas Chinese, because we go to America England, Canada, okay. Australia, you know, New Zealand, and yeah, so in the 1800s, is, you know.
How interesting.
Yeah, very enterprising people. And different people from different parts of Guangdong went into different industries. So my family, which is from Wuchang, they all became launderers, which was quite a hard working industry. And then some people from other areas of region made into fruit shops or market gardens. So you can kind of tell what area someone originated from by what their family did when they sort of immigrated to, you know, New Zealand and all sorts of other places.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah. I'm learning stuff already, Bev, and we're only 5 minutes in. Goodness. So, Bev, a lot of this, your exhibition is, it's quite a clever exhibition because it's kind of almost like a two-pronged exhibition of, you've got these beautiful knitted yumcha, but yes. Actually there's kind of a story behind it about your mother and your grandmother, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. So, as you say, it consists of a table of knitted Cantonese yumcha dishes. So yumcha is literally, when you translate it, it means drink tea, yumcha. So cha, you know, obviously is tea.
Yeah.
So really they're more the actual dish is a dim sum, but I will call it yumcha. But, you know, yumcha is actually the practice of sitting around and eating these dishes. So it's a tribute to my Chinese mother and grandmother, because they were amazing cooks and great knitters, and I wanted to combine those crafts together to tell their story. And basically, as you say, on the surface, the artwork looks bright, and it's bright red, it looks appealing, there's like lanterns, and it's quite sort of celebratory, and there's the soundtrack of a busy yumcha restaurant. So it looks appealing, but there is a message and story behind it, which we can get further into as we progress through.
Yes, and it's such a fascinating story. But you're right, you look at it originally, because if you are online, everyone, and you can go to YTV on YouTube, I've actually put a picture up of Fortune at the moment, so you can actually kind of have a look and see what we're talking about. But it is beautiful. It's just this beautiful spread of huge amounts of food. We've got dumplings, we've got some, you know, things I don't recognise and things I do recognise.
Right.
Clearly I need to be more yum cha kind of dim sum. I think I do love Chinese food, but some of this was like, I don't know what that is. But what I love is that you've got your sauces, you've got your teas, you've got everything is knitted, so it's not just, you know, pork buns and those kind of like round dumpling-y type things, but you've gone the whole hog and you've got sauce and tea and broccoli. I mean,
yeah, that's right. Well, partly also because lockdown went on so long, but also I started running out of particular colours of wool, so I'd have to try and buy them online. You know, and you sort of, your monitor, you know, says it's this colour, and then you get it and you think, oh, that doesn't really look like fried spring roll colour, but, you know, I'm my best. And So it just kind of organically grew, and
I was going to say, did you have a plan that you wanted to make so many dishes, or did you just think, I'll just start off with one and then...
I just started off with the barbecue pork buns, which are the round ones with the little red dot on them. And so my mum used to dip for barbecue pork buns, you know, like she'd mark them, and then she would stick her chopstick in some red food colouring and then stick that on the top of the bun, which would make that little red dot. And that would tell people that that was the flavour, because we made different flavours. And so I started with that one because that's kind of like the most sort of, everybody...
Even
though
pork buns.
Yeah, that's right. Even though the other day you were asking,
don't tell them that.
Are these pork buns?
Just wanted to check.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to be accurate about these things. Yeah, so I did that because I kind of already knew how to knit a sphere.
Okay.
And I thought, and I had some cream wool, and so I did those, and then they worked. And I thought, oh, this is great. Okay, well, I'll try some other things. And I used to help my mother fold the dumplings when I was a kid.
Mm.
So I thought, if I can make sort of these different shapes or in wrappers and stuff, and I can fold them, and, you know, and so I just I went from there. I sort of thought, okay, I've made that one. Let's see if I can make another type thing. And I remember during lockdown, I wanted to buy some of those bamboo steamers. And you know how we didn't know much about COVID, and so I would contact people through Facebook Marketplace, and then they'd have to leave it somewhere, like at the letterbox, yes. And you'd pick it up, and then, you know, or whatever, and you'd put the money in an envelope, and you know.
Yes.
So, because things were kind of quite scarce. It was quite weird, wasn't it? A weird time, because it sort of went back to probably how things might have used to be a bit more.
Yeah.
Where you sort of, that's how I sort of sourced the steamers. So there was a restaurant that was closing down, so I got a bunch of steamers from them. And, now what were we talking about? We were just talking about, I don't know. You can ask me another question.
Well, I wanted to know, how long have you been knitting for? Because just even looking at this picture, it's astonishing to me that anybody could even knit that. Because, you know, to be honest, Bev, I have picked up my knitting needles again only because of you this week. And I thought... I can knit. Surely it can't be that hard, you know, muscle memory and all that. Because I used to knit when I was a child. I remember knitting this hideous jumper, which when I finished didn't fit me because it had taken me so long.
Oh, that's very ambitious knit a jumper when you're a kid.
Yes, I think I was about 12 and I was like, no, I'm going to knit a jumper. Of course. What else am I going to knit? Not a scarf, you know, anything sensible. And by the time I finished it, it was far too small and I was like, this is a really ugly
jumper.
That's
amazing though, because that's the main thing, really, is the finishing it, you know?
Yes, actually following through. Anyway, so I picked up some knitting needles this week, and my youngest son was like, what are you doing, Mum? And I was like, well, I'm knitting. And he's like, well, can you show me how? And I was like, this is how it starts, isn't it? You have a parent who's doing something, and then a child goes, what are you doing? Can you show me that? And I thought, well, that's probably the same.
If you look at my toolkit, I've got a knitting recipe for the pork buns.
Oh.
So if you like, you can, I don't know, if you on your website, you can always put the recipe up for the listeners.
That's a good idea.
Have a go yourself.
Well, I'm not sure I'm that technically advanced yet, Bev. I was only doing lines,
knitting's pretty much just, you know, knitting, purling, casting on, casting off, increasing and decreasing. You know, I mean, for me, that's, you know, you can add in cables, you know, things like that, but that's all I'm doing, and I'm not even doing a lot of it. A lot of, you know, like, it's actually, it looks more complicated than it is, but it's not. It's really, more what it was is spending the time prototyping and working out, you know, and then thinking, I'll try this, and it's like, oh, no, that didn't look very good. You know, and then, thinking about what I was going to make and how I would make it was really what took the time. And then once you've worked out how to do it, it's not really that difficult.
Yeah.
I'm quite, yeah, yeah. So
I think that's astonishing that you know, I'm going to make a dumpling. This is what I need to do. Because I think in my head, I'm like, I need to make a dumpling. I'm not even going to start making, I don't even know where to start. So I think just because the amount of shapes and colours and, kind of textures you've got on this face is just astonishing. When I think that's just wool, it's just wool. She's just done something clever with wool.
It is wool.
Amazing.
But it's also not knowing what the different properties of some of the wool. You know, like So I used some sort of silk mohair, which is sort of, you know, if you use quite a big needle, then it can be sort of see through, and you know, you just sort of think about all the different things that you can use, or if you use a, you know, some wool was not quite right, so I'd like unpick it and make it thinner and or whatever. It was just because I clearly had too much time on my hands.
so how did you start knitting then, Bev? How old were you when you started knitting?
I would have been about 8 or 9 and my mum would have taught me.
Yeah.
And all my sisters knitted. I think I had 3 sisters and 2 of them were quite good. And, yeah, so it's always something I've done since I was young. And I think it was – I always wanted, you know, or like I say, a cartoonist or an artist or whatever. But it was not really something that was encouraged in my family. It was, like, you know, more like, oh, why don't you become a doctor or an accountant or something.
Art as a hobby kind of thing.
Yeah, why don't you just do art as a hobby? So I kind of always felt guilty about doing art, knitting – I didn't feel guilty about, because, you know, by the end of it, you've produced something. You know, you can wear it.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's worthwhile. Like, it's, yeah, it's not something like drawing. What are you doing the drawing for? You know?
Yeah.
So I think that also makes sense why the first sort of major artwork I did was knitted. You know, it sort of, apart from it marrying those two crafts together, which my mum and grandma were great at, it's also, it was a way, you know, I've worked in galleries my whole life to be around art, but I didn't really have the courage myself to sort of, you know, just get out there and do real art, you know. But, yeah, so knitting it sort of made sense to me. So I've been doing it since I was a kid. Most of the time I just make clothing and stuff and using other people's patterns. But for Fortune, I made sure that I made my own patterns. And there's not actually, I think there's some crochet patterns for some dumplings out there, but I haven't really seen any other knitted ones. So, and I didn't want to copy anybody else anyway for this.
See, that's fantastic. So it's the same as you. I've kind of worked in museums for quite a long time, and the amount of creative people that you come across is just astonishing. You think, gosh, I'm not very creative at all. But then actually, you know, you've just got your little, your thing that you're quite good at, and actually just need a bit of a push, don't you, to kind of go, oh, actually, I am as good as all these people I'm putting exhibitions up for. I can do this. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah,
well,
it's been amazing. When I first made it, so basically I started in lockdown. The lockdown kept going, so I kept making dishes. And then I think the lockdown finished sort of December 2021. Mm. And then I thought, oh, actually my mother had passed away like 20 years earlier. But I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, she would have been 70 in March of the following year. So I'll just make a few more, and then I'll get it photographed, and I'll put it on Facebook for her birthday.
Yeah.
So that's what I did, and I didn't actually – when I made it, I wasn't thinking that I was going to exhibit anywhere or, you know, but I put it up, and then I was just sort of quite surprised by people's reaction. It was really amazing. And I had Leanne Wickham, who I used to work with years ago. She's now at Whirinaki Whare Taonga in Upper Hutt. She said to me, oh, do you want to exhibit this? And I hadn't thought about it as a standalone artwork, because I wanted to make this, and I wanted to make, I've got ideas for lots of other things I want to do, and I was going to do a whole bunch of, like, a big body of work.
Right.
And then I thought, oh, actually, I guess it can, you know, it is something that is sort of standalone, and it can be something, to exhibit without these other things that I was thinking of.
Yeah.
And so we just worked together on it, and it showed there. And then actually Sarah McClintock, who's your director at Aratoi, she was at that opening, and she said, I'd be really keen to show it. And I was like, oh. And, which was great, you know. And then that's how the tour sort of pretty much started. And, so you guys are the sixth.
What?
Venue. Even though Sarah asked, she was the first person to ask, it's gone around. So it went from Upper Hutt to Hamilton, to Dunedin, to Gore, then to Whanganui, and now it's Masterton, and then it's going to Wellington.
Oh, so, awesome.
It's been really amazing.
Now, Beth, we're already 20 minutes in. Should we have some music?
Okay. Yes.
Now, you and I, we both have a shared love of Flight of the Conchords, don't we?
Yes.
We do. Now, I need to hear your story, because you've been teasing
me. I want to hear your story.
No, my story's rubbish. I'm sure yours is really good. I've got a couple of really small stories about Flight of the Conchords, but not a huge one. But I want to hear yours first.
Oh, I don't know if mine's huge.
Set up the song.
Okay.
Oh, the song's... I'm waiting for you.
Oh, the song... Oh, I thought the song was coming. Okay.
You talk first, and then I'll put the song on.
Okay. So, I'm from Wellington. I used to always have this massive crush on Jermaine Clement, and I'd see him around all the time, and I'd go to all their shows. So he used to have a show before Flight of the Conchords with Taika Waititi, and that was called Humour Beasts. Anyway, I used to go to them, Flight of the Conchords, I went to them, and they had a gig at a bar called Happy, which I don't think is around anymore, and they were trying out new material, and they were hilarious. But anyway, they said, you know, at interval, they said, oh, we're not actually very funny, you know, that this, we're trying out this new stuff, and so we're going to shout everybody a drink at the bar. So we got a free drink. They paid. A free drink. Part of the Concours bought me a drink.
That's so, quite a cool story.
That's my story.
That's quite a cool story. My story's a bit rubbish now in comparison. So I used to work at a school in Wellington, kind of where Jermaine used to live. And again, you, like you say, you kind of see him around all the time. And yes. I remember I was teaching, and I was on zebra crossing duty in the morning, you know, because that's the fun things that teachers have to do. And I was just going, you know, hello, 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 good morning to everybody. And I this very bearded man, I remember he was very bearded, came on hello, and I was like, oh,
whoa,
I know that voice. And for the rest of the day, I was just kind of on cloud nine going, oh, I said hello to Jermaine. Oh my God, I said hello. Oh my God. So sad. But
another reason, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know if you see him around Wellington these days, because I haven't been there for 10 years, but one of the reasons, well, the reason we chose Flight of the Conchords as well is because, of course, Jermaine is from Masterton.
He is, indeed.
So I felt like most of the musical choices today are from artists from Masterton. So that gives you a clue who might be playing.
Very good. He was actually, we put a photo of Jermaine up in Adatoy for, I can't remember, an exhibition a couple of years ago from his, what we do in the Shadows time. And I was really hoping one day he would just come in and go, oh, that's me, and we could have a photo next to it. But he never did. He never did. But I went to, my husband and I went to one of his gigs, and we Flight of the Conchords, and Brett was wearing the same shoes I had on, and I was just over the moon. I was like, we've got the same shoes.
See, this is the thing. I know you're from England, but this is a high, big thrill for us in New Zealand when these things happen. You know, like, it's really awesome.
Anyway, shall we play Fly the Conchords? And it's Inner City Press you've chosen, isn't it? Now, why do you like this one in particular? Anything particular about this song that you really like?
Oh, no, I just really like it. Like, I must admit, I mean, it's quite Pet Shop Boys-y.
Yes.
The video is good.
Yes, we've got the video ready to go. So if you are watching live, you can actually enjoy a bit of Flight of the Conchords and
watching live. So,
you can.
So are people watching you kind of like in the studio?
Possibly, hopefully. Hopefully a few people are. Yes, but I've been putting up lovely photos of your exhibition, but now I was going to put up, Jermaine and Brett, so that's probably much better for them to watch. All right, should we get going? Okay. Otherwise,
see you soon.
Okay, see you soon, Bev.
We are poor, aren't we? Inner city life, inner city pressure, the concrete world is starting to get you. The city is alive, the city is expanding. Living in the city can be demanding. You've pawned everything, everything you own. Your toothbrush, jar and a camera phone. You don't know where you're going, you cross the street. You don't know why you did, you walk back across the street. Standing in the sitting room, totally
so
skint, and your favourite jersey is covered in lint. You want to sit down, but you sold your chair.
I was going to say, we haven't talked about, talked about the work, but not what it was about.
You just stand there.
So I probably need to just start. Okay, that's cool. And I know what you mean.
In a city
so this next bit, this question. Oh yeah, sorry.
Counting coins on the counter of the 7-Eleven from a quarter past six till a quarter to seven. The manager, Bevan, starts to abuse me. Hey man, I just want some muesli. Neon signs, hidden messages, questions, answers, fetishes. You know you're not in high finance. Considering second-hand underpants.
Check your mind, have you got it
so bad? What happened to those other underpants you had? Look in your pockets, haven't found a cent yet. Lennon's on your balls,
have you paid your rent yet?
The city pressure. I know. What's that? Yeah.
So you think maybe you'll be a prostitute just to pay
you
for your lessons. You're learning the food.
You know how they pay you very much for this. Looks like you'll never be a retro.
Don't measure up to the expectation. When you're unemployed, there's no vacation.
He went to
no
my primary
cares,
school,
no one
but
sympathizes.
I
you just stay home and play synthesizers.
Yeah. I remember him going to that market in Newtown, bed market, and he must have had a daughter called Vita or something. He was like, Vita! And she was not listening to him. She was only about three, and she was on the Jungle Gym or something, and she was just like, I don't understand. Yeah, and you could see he sort of had that beaten down parent look.
We're back live, Bev. It finishes quite quickly, Bev.
I have got other stories, but yeah.
we were just laughing.
I just thought that was really cool, you know, being shouted the whole bar.
That's
a free drink. It was amazing.
Well, I'm going to go home and listen to all of Flight of the Conchords again, so that was brilliant. I'm going to be singing that all afternoon. Now, Bev, we've talked about your knitting and we've talked about how you've knitted and why you knitted and COVID. Tell us about kind of the story behind Fortune, because it's a really interesting story, kind of a family story behind Fortune, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. So, as mentioned before, so the early set of Chinese. So, the Cantonese, Yum Cha is a Cantonese cuisine and tradition. And I'm Cantonese, so all my ancestors. And so the early settler populations were established their homes outside of China and outside of Guangdong. Back in the day, they were Cantonese. And some people listening, hopefully, maybe, will know about the Chinese poll tax, which was introduced in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and the United States in the 1800s. And basically that was, so when the Chinese started coming to the countries, and may I say, New Zealand actually invited the Chinese, but then they thought there were too many of us, they basically let us mine the mines that were already, the Europeans had already mined and thought there was no more gold.
Right.
But because the Chinese sort of were industrious and they worked in plans and all that sort of stuff, and they kept working and they found more gold. And so anyway, the locals didn't really like that very much and thought there were too many of us. And so they introduced a poll tax, which it first of all was like £10, which was like in the 1880s or something. And then they increased it to £100, which... And apparently there was talk of even increasing it to £1,000 after a while. So they increased it to £100, I think, in 1891. Both my grandfathers would have paid that. My great-grandfathers, I think, came before. My great-grandfather still had to pay it, but he didn't have to put his fingerprints on because later on you had to pay it. You had to pass an English test and you had to be fingerprinted on your way in. And it was £100 by the time my grandfathers came in. But anyway, they brought this in, they also brought it in Australia, and they had other types of taxes in Canada and the United States. But many people might not know that as a result, for many decades up to World War II, the Chinese populations in these countries were overwhelmingly male, because I was just told actually on Friday, someone who came to my talk said, Steve Austin, who some people may know, but anyway, he's now a Wairarapa local. He's moved to the Wairarapa. He's writing a book about the early Chinese settlers, and he said actually back then the Chinese government didn't let a lot of the females leave China either because they wanted the men to return. So overwhelmingly male, partly because... maybe because they didn't let the women out, and also because they didn't want to, you know, £100 is a lot to pay to send a female over when, you know, send a male, whatever. And so most Chinese men who had immigrated couldn't afford the £100 poll tax for their wives. And the norm was then to make home visits every few years, which is what my great-grandfather did. So on both sides, they went home, married, conceived children, came back to New Zealand, left their wives and children in China. Same with my grandfather. So when they were old enough, when they were about 12 or 14, they would come out. They would work here for a while, they borrowed money to come here, so they'd work here. Then every few years they would go back, get married, conceive, have children. So there were two generations, actually, of our family who were sort of separated because of the poll tax and because the men were living in New Zealand. So it was only when World War II broke out and the Japanese invasion of China that there was a rare opportunity for 500 Chinese women and children who already had men in New Zealand. Mm. So the New Zealand government granted 500 women and children this opportunity to come to New Zealand temporarily at first. And the men who were here had to pay a bond to bring the women out.
No.
And my grandmother and mother were two of these 500 lucky people. So,
gosh.
Yeah. And so, they came in 1940. And so that's partly why it's called Fortune, because it cost a fortune to bring them out.
Yeah.
It was also their good fortune that my grandfather was already here. And also because when I was buying wool for making the work, that cost me a fortune as well.
Yes, I can imagine.
Some people will know the story about the poll tax, but
yeah.
I think not as many people know about the 500 women and children.
No.
And I have had a lot of people who've gone to the show who've said that to me. I had no idea. A lot of people had no idea about the poll tax either. So that's what I wanted to do with that show, was to make it look sort of visually appealing. And then if you want to get, I'm not going to hit you over the head with it, but if you read the label, then you'll hear about all of the things that sort of went on and the sort of legislation where it was sort of trying to, and the Chinese were the only people that had to pay the poll tax to come to New Zealand. So
the only
ethnicity, the only nationality that had to do it. So,
okay.
Yeah, and there is a poll tax, the Chinese Poll Tax Heritage Trust, which so the government didn't refund or make restitution or payments back to the families, but there was a formal apology in 2002, and they ring fenced some of the money that our ancestors had paid, and the interest from that is what sustains the Chinese Poll Tax Heritage Trust. So there's a trust that gives out small grants to, I was lucky enough to get one for Fortune for the acrylic lid and for a crate so I could for the show. And they give out grants two times a year, and it's just from the interest. Which is great, because from that it's made a huge difference. So for it's been going 22 years or something, and there's been books written. There was that really great TV series called Sik Fan La. There's Fortune, there's plays and other books and all sorts of things that have been produced with help from the Poll Tax Trust.
So it's doing some good. Yeah. It feels like it's doing some good.
Yeah, it's been really, really good. And it's kind of what is good as they managed to do it before some of the older people had died.
Yep.
And so some of that knowledge was captured in some of the books. And, it was a really good thing for the government to have done.
It's kind of, I feel kind of speechless really, because there's so much about our history that I still don't know. When I come across things like this, I'm like, what? Oh, how did I not know about this?
Totally. Well, isn't it bizarre that we're only just starting to teach New Zealand history in schools? It's quite, because when I grew up, it was always, England, America, Yeah, and you just never, I never thought, why aren't we learning about, so it's great that we are starting to learn about it.
It is interesting, actually, because both my boys are now in primary school, and they often come home and tell me about some kind of New Zealand history or New Zealand famous person. I'm like, tell me more. I need to know all of this. So it is lovely that they're actually being taught about this kind of stuff now. And it isn't just, like you say, the English or the American history, because we've got such an interesting history here.
Well, they did sort of say, there used to be the cultural cringe where, it's kind of like, if it's from here, it can't be any good, and or you've got to go overseas and make it before you're taken seriously back in New Zealand, and all of those sorts of things. So that, it's good to see that changing, for sure.
So your mother and your grandmother, they were both knitters and cooks, weren't they?
Yeah, whereas I'm only a knitter, I'm not a cook.
I'm sure, Bev, come on, I'm sure you are.
No, I'm not. I'm really lazy. No, no, no. I like thinking up the house. I don't like doing dishes.
Oh, sounds perfect.
Also, I don't have the, you know how some people just know, they'll taste something and go, oh, it needs more coriander or it needs more soy sauce or whatever. I don't have that, and I don't know how to fix something.
Oh, okay, no dinner at your house then, Bev. So what I did want to ask is, did your family live in many parts of New Zealand? Because you were talking about gold, or did they come straight to Wellington?
Yeah, well, I think the earlier generations did. So that's why I sent the show to Gore, because my great-grandfather on my father's side, he ran a laundry in Gore, and so I specifically wanted to go to Gore. And Gore is actually really a cool little place. Mm. This is what's so great about a tour, is I'm finding out all these really cool things about different regions of New Zealand that I would never have known about. So if you're ever in Gore, you've got to go and see the East and South Gallery, which is incredible. And it's got the most amazing West African collection, the Don Meyer collection, and it's got a Ralph Hotari collection. And they do, they've across the road, they've got the Hokanui Moonshine Museum, where they make their own whiskey that you can buy. It's really great.
Well,
yes. Great-grandfather on dad's side was in Gore. Great-grandfather on mum's side was in Timaru. And then they slowly sort of worked their way up to Wellington. You know, through, I think there was a Wairarapa connection. I think my grandfather on my mother's side he sort of moved around quite a lot.
Mm.
So he, you know, and then, yeah, I think he did end up in the Wairarapa for a bit, and then they all settled in Wellington. And so I think the older generations, we were down south. And my great-grandfather on my dad's side ended up being buried back in China. But my great-grandfather on my mother's side, I think, is buried in Timaru Cemetery. But then my parents and my grandparents are in Wellington, in the Makara Cemetery. So, yeah, they sort of stayed put when they got to Wellington.
And now you've gone up to Auckland.
You're slowly moving up the country.
Interestingly, Bev, I did want to ask, as your tour has been going around the country, have you been adding any new dishes, or have you noticed that the exhibition has changed in different places?
It always looks different, and it's always a real delight seeing how the different venues display it. I haven't added more dishes. The only thing is, one thing I wanted to make, which I never kind of perfected until after the show went, after the exhibition went on show, was chicken feet. So.
Oh my God. Well, I'm sorry. I'm quite glad there are no chicken feet in there.
And so, but I have to say, I've got chicken feet actually on display at the moment at a show. I've got I'm in a group show at the Bergman Gallery in Auckland, and I've got chicken feet on display there. And there will be chicken feet going into a display at Auckland Museum in a couple of months. Mm. But so I haven't added to the show itself. I just sort of thought, no, this is it, this is all contained. I'd actually made slightly more dishes that could fit on the table, but the table sort of dictated how many dishes could go on into the show. So so there were a few I actually had to leave out, but the best ones are in there. And then, but for example, the last venue, which is Whanganui, they had an activity table in the space, and I have a little activity that I include in the toolkit, which is making lucky pats sort of paper. There's a template in there, and they set something up there, and they hung a thing where you could hang your lucky cats. And by the end of it, I think they've done maybe 1,300 lucky cats.
God.
Like people had come in and done them. Some people took them away, but there were probably 800 hanging up there.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it was really cool. You just get different. And different venues do different things for the show. Like in Dunedin, we had a lion dance for the opening. And, you know, it's really lovely. And you get to sort of get to the local Chinese community, and it's really great catching up with old friends. I've caught up with old friends in every town, including Masterton. So, yeah, it's been amazing. Awesome. Shout out to Janet Green and Steve Austin and Brian Wood, Nigel. Nigel Carter, I think his name is. Yes. So they're locals.
They are. Should we move on to our next song? Because we're rapidly running out of time, Bev. We've squeezed three songs in. Should we have Lady Hawk next?
Yes, Lady Hawk, so Masterton. I don't have a story about her except that she's from Masterton.
Okay.
And also that this song reminds me a bit of Prince. And Prince was also a favourite of mine, and this is a great song. Her stuff is really fantastic.
And it's Think About You, isn't it? Which is actually a different one, which is not the one that I think everyone knows, but this is a pretty good one.
Yes, but also, the reason I've chosen Lady Hawk was my friend Ron Carla, who does these amazing quilts, which...
Was he there on Friday?
If you look him up, he was there on Friday, yes. Hopefully we'll one day have a show at Aratoi, yes, we're working on it.
Yep.
He was the one that told me that she's from Masterton. And I was like, oh, cool, okay, I'm going to play some Lady Hawk.
Okay, Lady Hawk.
Take it away.
Think About You. Okay, go. Thanks, Bev.
Oh, cool. Sorry, I hope I'm not raving too much. Yeah, I was like, oh, can I play a chord? Can I play a song? And then it's like, you can't. Can't be warming up. We're living worlds apart. But still you have a heart. And do you think you will record this? You put it on the website as well, so can I link to it from my website? Oh, brilliant. And he was talking on BFM and asking him stuff, and he said, oh, they woke me up, and I should have written everything down. And anyway, he said, oh, you know, the sex version's about, it's got 10 Asian artists in it, and he said, oh, and some of them have been here since Victorian times, and who names Beth Moon? Dindin and Gore. Dindin and... Oh! That's the wrong answer, eh? Sorry. yes. Yeah, no, it was great. It's really lovely, and it doesn't matter where you go. Like, I should have done a shout-out to Kat as well, because I used to work with Kat, you see. So I already knew Kat. This is true. What is the time? Okay. Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yep. Okay. Okay. I'll try and be fair. I definitely want to talk about what I'm working on now, because I want to plug a few, other things. But yes, no, I've got answers to all of those. I've typed it all up. ChatGPT told me it was 23 minutes. Well, it's just because I was like, oh God, I just wanted to get a sense of how long. Yeah, so it's good. Oh no! Well, oh God. No! Well, actually, I did play Lady Hawk when I was on Radioactive, so... That's another connection, I suppose. Okay.
I love that, Bev. That was such a good song. I really enjoyed
that. That is me. She's really good.
So, a little bird tells me, Bev, you used to be a DJ. What is going on?
Oh, I wasn't a DJ for very long, and I wasn't particularly good. And I never played.
I never mixed.
I didn't go. I just played other people's songs. But I used to announce on Radioactive for a little bit, and I used to play Ladyhawk. So it's a nice little connection there.
Lovely connection.
And my DJ name was Mooncake, which is how how my name ended up being Moon. I actually changed it by Deadpool.
Did you?
Yeah.
So why were you Mooncake? What was the story behind Mooncake?
I think my flatmate just suggested it one day. He said, why don't you call yourself Mooncake? I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. Going to call myself Moon afterwards. Lovely.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
I thought about surname Mooncake and I thought, no, that's not quite right. I think Moon's better. Yeah, anyway.
anyway, I love it. Bev, we've only got about 10 minutes left, amazingly. Ooh. I know this an hour goes so quickly, but I do have a few more questions. I wanted to ask you, and I always ask this to our artists, because there's always one thing that they focus on that was one of the hardest things they had to do for the exhibition. They go, oh, yes, it's this. What in your exhibition would you think was the hardest thing that you're just so proud of that you actually completed it? Or maybe you didn't complete it. Maybe it was in a knitting bag somewhere going, oh, I hated doing this.
I think the steamed vegetables.
The broccoli.
The broccoli, yes, because I had to sort of work out how to, you know, made the leaves all different and the stalks and stuff. But I was going to say the hardest thing really for me is because I live on my own and I can make stuff in isolation and I don't like to reveal it until the last minute.
Right.
And so I don't actually know for sure if something what I'm doing is any good. You know, sometimes I think I get the feeling, oh, yeah, I think, you know, but you don't actually know until you put it out there and you get the feedback. And so, I just have to trust myself and keep going. I probably should get somebody in to give me some feedback, but I never do.
Just come in and have a look. Does this look like broccoli? No. Okay, I'll
start again. Yeah, that's right. Well, does it need to look like broccoli? Maybe I'll turn it into, maybe it'll be bok choy.
Yeah, some kind of spinach. Yeah, some kind of green blob on a plate.
Yeah, so I do. I find that because and it tends to be just the way I work. I like to sort of do big bodies of work and then show people and then, but that it's, if I'm going on the wrong track, you know, like, then you know, I've made a whole bunch of wonder crap and yeah, so I should really sort of get a bit more feedback on the way, on the journey.
You should. are there any particular other dishes that have got good stories behind them? You go, oh, I remember doing those, like those egg tarts. Oh, yes, this is a great story.
Yes. Not really. The only thing is that the barbecue pork buns and what we call dung, which is, some people call it gordung or jung, and then other people call it other things, is the bamboo leaf-covered wrapped packages.
Oh, yes.
Those two dishes were ones that my mother used to make with her mother as a child. Like, she would be like 13 or something, and she would get, or maybe she was a little bit older, and she would get, they would get their younger siblings to take them down Chinatown and sell them. So, because they were the sort of things that you could eat, you know, they would keep sort of thing, and you could steam them up, whereas some of those other dishes, they would sort of spoil if you, you know, you'd have to sort of, yeah. So
I
guess that's
that.
The story behind that. Yeah, so my grandfather was always very enterprising and he was always looking at ways to make a buck.
He sounds such an interesting man.
Yes, I'm going to do a show about him soon, I think, about some of the enterprising things that he used to do
to keep his
family fed and clothed. Yes.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Talking of new shows, Bev, what are you doing next? Are you still doing more knitted food or are you doing something quite different?
I sort of took a little bit of a break from it, but at the moment I'm in part of a wonderful new exhibition at Bergman Gallery, Bergman, BERGMAN Gallery in Auckland. It opened just last week, the day before Fortune opened.
You've been busy.
Yeah. I know, just, you know, globetrotting. And so this show is called Belonging, and it's stories of contemporary New Zealand Asian artists, and there are 10 of us. And I've got, in that show, I have got a couple of the, so I've got my chicken feet, I've got like a place setting of like a few dishes, and then another steamer of the sorted dishes, because that's sort of, you know, something that people can associate with me. But I've also got a painting, which is a menu. Well, it's based on the menu that used to hang in my father's fish and chip shop. He ran it for 32 years. And then I've also done a sculpture of a water buffalo's head. So that's in there. That's one for the rest of the month. And then next month, is it next month? Yes, September, October, at Auckland Museum, the Arts of Asia Gallery is being revamped, and another little small installation of some of the knitted dishes, including the chicken feet, are going into that. So that'll be, I think, 6 months a year, maybe even more. Whoa. So, which is exciting. It is really exciting. And then I also took off some time earlier this year to work on a big body of work, which knitted, but it's also got painting, sculpture, embroidery, and I've had them photographed, and I will start to reveal those on Instagram soon. Oh. And then, like I was saying to you, I've got another idea about my grandfather that I want to start working on. So
I love
it. There's lots.
Amazing.
Yeah. At the beginning, just keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, at the beginning of the show, I love you. Like, I'm not an artist. I just did some knitting. And now you're doing painting. I mean, sculpture of a water buffalo's head. That's pretty insane to me already. Oh, just a bit of embroidery. Or just a few more exhibitions. But I'm not an artist.
And then, you know, the full-time job as well.
Yes.
Got to kind of fit that in around everything.
Because you work up at Auckland Museum, don't you, Bev?
Yeah. Which is great. Like, there's some... And that's not the reason I got that exhibition. I just want to put it out there.
I was going to ask. Very suspicious.
I've got a bit suspicious. Yes. But they go through a very rigorous process where, anyway, so if they acquire anything, they've got to, you've got to go right up through the proper channels, and I'm not allowed to be involved in any of it. And, so don't worry. It's all above board.
It's all above board, everyone.
So it's... Yeah, it's a really interesting place of work, which is, I know Aratoi would also be.
Yes.
And,
Because you're in collections, aren't you, Beth? Is it collections you're in?
Yeah. I'm in with the Human History Collection, so that's Māori Pacific, World, Archaeology, History, Applied Arts and Design.
Oh, my goodness. Collections.
Yeah, anything that's humans.
Anything that's humans.
That humans have made or, been associated with. Yeah, there's some pretty cool collections.
Amazing.
I'm very lucky.
I mean, I love working in the museum anyway because, every day is completely different. And I can imagine working with all these collections that you're just uncovering all these incredible crafts and arts and just all those stories that kind of have those objects and things kind of come along with. So it must be so fascinating.
Yes. Oh, did you? Oh, one thing that I would like people to take away from the exhibition.
Hang on, Beth. What would you like people to take away from the exhibition? My final question. So I've got a bit of a tangent. What would you like people to take away from the exhibition when they come in?
That the Chinese have been in Aotearoa for sort of 160, 180 years. So a lot of people, they're still seen as other.
Yeah.
But we have actually been, my family's been in the country since the 1880s. We did a lot of the jobs that the locals weren't keen on doing. We brought cuisines in, we created the market gardens, fed lots of people who went to war, and we even fought for New Zealand during the war. There's a couple of soldiers that are honoured in the Auckland Museum, actually, who are Chinese. And we contributed to society even when we didn't have the same rights. Like my grandfather didn't become a citizen until the 1960s, even though he had been in New Zealand since 1920, but there was just legislation just meant that they were actually aliens. I've got alien registration papers for my grandfather's.
Oh my goodness.
And also the other one I wanted people to take away is that knitting and craft can be seen as art, and you'll see that when you go to Aratoi, because there's an amazing show that opens next week with it, which is sort of a lot of weaving and lace making. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting kind of link between Fortune and Approaching Home, which is our next exhibition in the gallery, because there's a lot of kind of craft and linen and also what is home, what does home mean You know, is it the plants, all the stories, all the traditions that you kind of bring along with you, no matter whereabouts in the world you are? So, yeah, that's going to be a really interesting one.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out to Kat Auburn, who's one of the artists in that show, and she's, I don't know if I should reveal. She's made some lace.
Oh, yes, you can. You're gone. Reveal it.
Oh, with her own hair, and yes, it's just amazing. And I used to work with her at the dance. I just want to say, hi, Kat. Love your work.
Any other shout-outs you'd like to do, Bev?
Oh, I just want to shout out, Auckland Museum. If we've got time to play the song, I just want to shout out to Hexham, who I work with at the museum, and he helped me with the Lazy Susan in Fortune. He came up with, he 3D printed like these little gears and all sorts of things so that it works properly. And so I just wanted to say that actually one of the really special features about Fortune is the little rotating Lazy Susan, and he was an integral part of it. And he if we have time to play the song by Royal Falcon, he is the singer and the drummer in that particular song. So that's why I wanted to, you know, just wanted to shout out and say thank you. Aww. Because he's an unsung hero.
Oh, there's all these people behind exhibitions, isn't there? There's kind of the star, and then there's all the people who help in the background.
Yes, I hope I managed to get all my shout outs in. But anyway, if I didn't, my apologies. You're in my heart. Aww. You're in my thoughts.
So, Bev, how long is your exhibition on for?
Do you know? I think it's until the 13th of October.
It is. Well done.
And then, like I say, if you're in Auckland, come up to Bergman. That's until the 31st of August. And if you're after August, come and see the Auckland Museum. And then if you miss the show at Aratoi, come and see it at Wellington Museum. I think it opens on the 30th or the 30th of November or the 1st of December.
Where's it going after Wellington?
And that's actually when that's the end of the tour. I'm like, that's all, folks.
That's it.
What? You snooze, you lose. You've got to see it now.
You snooze, you lose.
So, yeah.
That's awesome, Bev. Well, it's been so lovely to talk to you, and I loved your music choices very much. I'm going to be humming Inner City Pressure for the next week, I think.
Oh, I know. And you're going to be reliving your Jermaine and Brett stories.
I mean, he's always in my head anyway, just kind of, you know, hanging about. So I hope he's all listening.
I know, they are. They're so special, aren't they?
They are. And love it. And I didn't tell you my best story.
What is your best story?
My best story. I think we've got time. when I was, again, working at the school, I had to choose a couple of children from my class. And I wasn't told why. I had to just choose some children. And they are the children that are on the Red Nose song, Feel Inside. And they're some of the kids from my class. And I was like, I chose them.
Wow.
And so,
amazing.
When I first saw that video, I was like, oh, my God. I was instrumental. I was kind of instrumental. I was kind of, I chose them. Not really knowing why. But, yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, but they must be. Well, when was that song? 20 years? No, it can't be 20 years ago. 15 years ago?
Wow. Something so they'll like be adults
they'll
now,
They'll be adults now. And that's crazy. I'm just going to be rethinking of Flight of the Conchords all day. Bev, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you talking.
It's such a pleasure to talk. And as you say, like I didn't think I could talk for an hour, but...
It's funny how...
Here we go.
And we're done. And we're like, God, it's nearly 2 o'clock already. But please download it if you do want to download and listen to it again. Or you can go and watch it on YouTube. And I think we're on Spotify as well. So, just go and find it. It'll be on our social. There's a link there to follow. But if you go to Arrow FM, you'll be able to find it on Aratoi Pathways to Art. And you can just download it then to listen again. Or share about with people you love who maybe talk about knitting or delicious food or home or whatever you want to do. Thank you so much, Bev, and have a lovely afternoon, everyone. And I will talk to you all again next month. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, bye, everyone. Bye.